Now, good afternoon, ladies. It's nice to see you back here. It seems like we're getting less and less, but I am hoping that people are on their way. I would like to send a sheet around to get your names. Your leader have asked me to get your names so that you will know the people who have done so far the courses. Okay. Yes, yes. I need their names and how many of the classes. So you could do their names and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday columns. And not yet, not yet. I'm going to do the last questions on these first. Now, we're going to do things a little bit differently today. We're going to ask you to sit in groups as usual, and we're going to have five groups. And we're going to give each group a question. Each group will take a question. The first question for group one, and we'll start over here as group one. One, two, three, four, five. I'm going to ask you ladies to join a group for me, one of the table groups. If you like anyone, you could join. And number one, you will do number one question. Before we even start the presentation, I'm going to ask you to answer these questions. Why is communication so important? So write your question down, and I'm going to give you some time to talk about it. Group two, who will be group two? Right here, group two. What role do you think your perception play in your communication? And if you don't quite understand the question, use this. Explain the saying, we see things not as they are, but as we are. Okay? So that should help you. So as soon as they have finished writing their questions, I will go to the third question, and then the fourth, and then the fifth. Do you have some pencil and paper? No? Do you have some paper or no? You don't have any paper. So, do we have some paper here? We could just give them each a sheet of paper? No? Do we have some paper? It's just for the answering of that one question, though. So one sheet of paper would be fine. So as soon as you're finished writing your question down, group two, as soon as you're finished writing your question down, then I'll move to the question for group three. One, two, three, four, five. Group four. Yes, one, two, three, four, five. Okay. So as soon as group two is finished, let me know. Where's your friends today? They're not here.
Hot and sunny out. People are probably just moving slowly.
Or enjoying the sun today. Yeah, I was hoping that we would have everybody today so that they can all get their certification. You know, I was talking to your leader yesterday, Sister Sandra, and she was saying that some of you would be eligible for your certification, and she was going to send them to you in the mail, your certificates. So I'm hoping that you all will get your certificates, depending on where you are, you know, in the modules. Okay, is group two finished? Yes. Group three, what is empathy? How do we create empathy? That's group three. That would be this group right here. Your group, yes. Group three. Now, group four, what are some actions that block empathy? And then group five would be yours. Why should we strive for our communication to be congruent? And to help you, group five, to say, why would you strive for your conversation to be congruent? You could write down what we say and what we do must match. What are some actions that block empathy? Yeah. Okay. Now, as soon as you have your questions, we're going to pray to start. And I'm going to ask a volunteer to pray for us today, if you don't mind. Okay. What's your name again?
Shannon.
Shannon is going to pray for us. Let's bow our heads for prayer.
Dear Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you very much for all the ladies here and for us wanting to grow our skills so that we can be leaders in our church.
Amen.
I just thank you very much for all the material that we're learning, and just help us retain it and use it in the future. In your name, Heavenly Father, amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so very much, Shannon, for that beautiful prayer. This afternoon, we're talking about communication. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about conflict. And you know that we all have to communicate, right? In some way. Even if we don't speak, we communicate. The people who are deaf or dumb or blind, they still communicate. Because we need to get messages from one place to the other, or from one person to the other. Now, because communication is so vital in order for us to know what is going on, it is also important to know that sometimes our communication can be skewed, or a little mixed up, or a little not clear to the other person, and then that we will say may cause some kind of trepidation, some kinds of anxiety, and may even cause conflicts, fights, big disagreements, big blunders at times. So it is important to communicate. It is important to communicate at the level of our families, the level of our work, level of church, and with our team as women's ministries directors. So it's very important. Okay, the first question we have is, what is communication? I'm going to give the whole group, all the groups here, 5 minutes to talk about your question, and then we're going to ask the first group to answer their question on what is communication. And as I go through the lecture, I will ask the other groups their questions when we get to it. How about that? So you have 5 minutes, and we're going to put on the telephone ringer, and you will know when your 5 minutes are done. Okay, we're glad you're here.
Have you got an extra? Okay, Miss Fulton.
Yeah.
Oh, I have your email. Only my daughter and I can remember this. But you want my name?
And telephone or something. Because they want to send your certificate to you if you finish. Oh, you don't want your certificate?
Yeah.
My daughter's been in this ministry, and I Sonia loves me. I'm here for her. And she is a Katie, we don't need to what do we have to do? Communication to be congruent. So what we say and do makes an impression. So like, that's what we do.
Some ladies didn't sign up, it looked like they just auditing the place. Like the little lady between us two and the lady there, she didn't sign up.
Maybe because they weren't here. Because they weren't here for the other days, I guess.
So how come you don't want the pictures given out? Do you give it out?
I'm going to give it out after the, because the answers are on some of the questions. So we're finished. Our time is done. And I'm hoping that our first person will come up or will stand up right there and use their preaching voice to, because we have no microphone. Yes, we do. But can you hear me clearly? Yes, we might not need the microphone. Yes. Okay.
So our question was, why is communication so important? So we'll just go through and jot down our ideas and pass them on to you, and then we have a summary of them. So one of them was to avoid misunderstandings.
To communicate ideas.
To help other people gain knowledge.
Mm-hmm. To enhance relationships, for example, in the marriage situations or in business communication.
Mm-hmm. And good communicators provide clarity to situations, and also in marriage or friendships or church situations, business, that's so important to have clarity.
Okay.
It's also a universal type of communication.
And it helps us know each other. If we didn't communicate, whether it was non-verbal or verbal, we would not build those deeper relationships.
It helps us accomplish things, work together.
Mm-hmm.
So communication is a vital and universal skill that everyone needs, whether race, gender, anything.
Okay. Now, our group one did really, really very well with that. I don't think I need to teach anything about communication now. They've done it all. Yes, communication is a skill that we need. Now, the second question we have is, what role does perception play? Your team is, they probably think you're really competent.
So our question is, what role do you think your perception play in your communication? And perception play a very important part, because we see people, as you say, we see things that are not as there, but as we see them. A lot of times we're walking down the road, we treat people the way we see them. We have social class mentally, no matter, even though we don't think we have that, but we do. Like when we talk to pastor, we talk to him in a different way than we talk to somebody else. We judge them according to what we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know them, but if we see somebody judging a student, for instance, we talk to them in a different way, more respectful, maybe we treat them with more respect than we see somebody just like a woman. And maybe that was might be the one with the education.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. So our perception plays a very important role in the way we treat people.
Okay.
And even though we're not supposed to, we do.
Okay.
Like when I see her, because she's the teacher, so everybody wants to say, you know, hi teacher. And then I see this guy, I move away from him because he looks, you know, he don't look like us, he don't smell like us, and he don't act like us.
Okay.
So we treat them differently. So perception which we as Christians should not have, but we still do, plays a very important role in the world we treat.
Okay, let's give her a round of applause. Very good, group two. Group two. Now we have group three. Group three. What is empathy and how can we create empathy? Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And your name?
My name is Ka. And empathy is a difficult topic because you have to understand what's happening. Sometimes it's confused with sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
So empathy is to put yourself in someone's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
To, if you have gone through an experience like we're relating, like maybe you've lost a loved one, it's easy for you to empathize with somebody who's going through a loss. You mm-hmm. understand that grief can be something that's hard, but because you've been, even if you won't know exactly how they feel, but you understand it, grief can be something that is painful, so you can relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can create empathy, you shouldn't judge.
Mm-hmm.
You should listen and take their side, take where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
An experience with, I've never owned a pet, mm-hmm. but somebody who's lost a pet, to them they've lost like a member of their family.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've never owned a pet, I might think, what is a pet? But to the mm-hmm. other person, that's something that has been part of the family. So without judging, listen, give an ear, and understand where they're coming from.
Okay, very good. Our last group, group five, why should we strive for our conversation to be congruent? Group, well, what are some of the actions that block empathy? Group four, I'm so sorry. And she's trying to cop out, right?
So our question was, what are some actions that block empathy?
Tone of voice.
Logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Stance, how we're standing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Lack of communication.
Gossip.
Cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
Age.
Race.
Mm-hmm. Personal struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're preoccupied and concerned.
Okay. Okay, very good. And our last one now? Mm-hmm.
Ready to go. Hi, my name is Anne Lario. I come from Fort Saskatchewan, so I'm always, but my question was, why should we strive for our communication to be congruent? Or what we say and do must match. Now, like, if we were to tell a drunk, you know, to, like, if we ourselves were a drunk person and telling somebody else not to drink, and they saw us going into a bar and drinking, they'll say, well, that's the wrong thing. He's telling me not to drink, and you know, he's going drinking a while himself. So it gives the wrong impression. And also, like, if you can be unbelievable, like, you know, if the same thing, like, why is that person doing the same thing they told me not to do? Like, what's the point of it? And and a person that's listening to this will, you know, if the person that is given the topic and saying the things that a person should not do, and they see them, you know, doing the thing that they're telling the others not to do, they'll say, well, why should I do what they're already doing it? They're still doing it. Why should I stop? So that's another reason why, you know, like you'll be, they won't do what you're asking. Or the other thing is that, you know, negative brings on negative, positive brings on positive. If a person that's presenting does the things that they're telling others not what to do, then the group will be saying, well, I saw her at Walmart. You know, she's a Sabbath keeper. Why is she going to Walmart? You're not supposed to go shopping when you're at, you know, why should I, you know, follow the fourth commandment? If she's going shopping and she's telling me not to, then what's the point of following it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, if and it's basically negative advertising is more successful in being passed on, because that those people will see that, well, she was wrong. She's going shopping, and that's wrong, especially with our church. Like, why is she doing that, you know? And then one person will tell another person, it goes passed on by another to another to another. And the negativity brings on more negativity. But if a person does what they are communicating, like following the fourth commandment, and they're never seen in a grocery store or any type of store, you know, like, hey, you know, maybe there's some reason why that person is not going shopping on the Sabbath. Maybe we should consider that as well. So like, positivity brings positivity, you know, and the more positive, then there's more people that pass it on and pass it on, say, you know what I found out? And then they'll pass it on, and it continues to grow.
Thank you so very much. Let's give her a round of applause. Okay, so you have actually gone through our old presentation that we're going to do today. And bye-bye. And we're going to now see the difference in our conceptual thinking when we came here from what we're going to learn. And you will see some of the different ways. This will help you to, it will reinforce some of the other thoughts and the different perspective that you might have right now versus the perspective that you will have when it's time to leave. Okay? So that was that, what that exercise is about. You have your own perspective now as to what is communication, what it is to be congruent, what it is to empathize, you know, and how you can create empathy. Then I'm going to go through and tell you what this course has to offer you, and then we will see how your perspective has changed. Okay? Remember yesterday we talked about communication, the different ways that we can communicate. This is a follow-up. Remember our facial expressions, our eyes, our body, our words, our tone, the way we interact with people. These are all ways that we communicate, verbally and non-verbally. And communication is really important. It is a skill that can be learned by everyone and should be learned by everyone, because you need to communicate properly to avoid conflicts. And as long as we are here on earth, and as long as there is sin, there is the possibility for conflict. Conflict is inevitable, because we're human beings, and communication is a skill, and if we don't use the time, maybe we're good communicators, but we don't use the time properly to communicate with clarity, then it might cause some confusion, some miscommunication, and may end up with conflict. Interaction is how we get along, is how we move together in order to move forward. Communication helps us to interact and to move forward. There are processes that we have to go through in order to get outcomes. And we need to communicate with each other. We need to have messages sent to and from each other in order to move forward. Now, the role of perception in communication is that we all are from different backgrounds. We all are from different cultures. We all are from different homes, even if we are from the same place. And there are a variety of things that changes how we perceive things. I am sure that Judith, our perception of some things are completely different from how Anne perceives some things because of her family of origin, her place of origin, the people she was brought up with, depending on what her family makeup was, the education that she got, things that she was exposed to. Everything comes together to form our perception, our history, our personal history, whether we, our genders, whether we were male or female, we perceive things differently. And because of that, we have different words that have different meaning. And we act different ways with our bodies sometimes. And we can miscommunicate with our bodies as well as our words. Anybody has ever had somebody do a gesture that they thought it meant one thing and it's another thing? Well, in some countries, what does this mean here?
Come.
Well, in some countries, when you, what does this mean here? Bye. Bye. But in some countries, where did we go? And this means what? Come. Yes. So we have different things according to the culture and according to where you are. So what we, how we see things depend on who is seeing it. You know? So you can look at a picture. Have you ever looked at a picture? And if I had a picture, I would have said, sometimes you look at a picture and there is a person in the picture and they would ask you to identify what you see. And have you ever seen where somebody sees the face of a woman and somebody sees a head turned backwards and somebody sees a whole scene? Or you have a picture that looks like just little animals to the animals, but there is a bigger picture in it and you can see it? Yes. It depends on who is looking, you know, and the perspective. I know that somebody showed us a picture once and I saw two heads and I think my husband saw two trees, you know, and none of us were incorrect. Because there were two trees there, and they, and then the trees, the trunk looked like faces, and the leaves looked like here, and it, you could see two faces too. But it all depends on who is looking. So it tells us that sometimes when we're adamant that we are right, it all depends on our perspective. And when you're adamant that the other person is wrong, it depends on perspective, because they could be possibly correct because of what they are seeing. So we have to be very careful with that. But apart from perspective, we must be very, very careful that the message that we are sending will reach the sender in such a way that he or she interprets it like we meant it to be. And that is real communication. When the sender is able to give the receiver, let the receiver receive the exact message that they want to send. And so that's the skill in communication. It's just not to say something and let the other person receive it. The way that they think it should be, is to make sure that your receiver receive the message that was intended. So as women's ministries leaders, it is your responsibility to make sure that the messages that you are sending are received in the way that it was meant to be received. So, and if it's not received that way, then it is incorrect, because that's not what you really meant, is it? That's not what you really meant. Now, perspective is something else. There was a story about a ship. This man was a big-time captain, and I am almost sure you have heard the story. He was sailing, and it was night, and he wanted to go in, and he saw this light coming towards him, and his perception is that there is another ship coming towards me, and that ship needs to get out of my way. So he sent a message that, listen, I am Captain so-and-so, and I am here, and I am going in, and you need to get out of my way. And he didn't get any reply, but the light that he saw kept coming from the same direction. So it was saying to him that the ship was not changing direction at all. And so he sent the message again. He said, I am a battleship, and I can get you out of the way if I want to, but I'm asking you please to clear the way so that I can come in. At this time, he got a response, a message saying that, well, I am the lighthouse, and I am telling you, you need to change your course. Now, perception. Sometimes we have a perception that what we want to do is right as women's ministers leaders. This is the way we're heading, and everything should get out of our way because we are right and we're coming down this path. But sometimes we need to stop and we need to look, because sometimes the way we are going is dangerous, and we need to listen sometimes to the other perspective. So as leaders, we need to listen to our advisories, our team leaders, and they will help us to keep our perspective right at times. Now, our perspective is our reality, isn't it? Is my perspective your reality? No. But my perspective is my reality. So however I am seeing this, this is how real it is to me. As leaders, sometimes remember that your committee or the pastor that you're working with, they see things according to their perceptions. So we need to put ourselves and look through their eyes to see whether what they're saying to us makes sense, and we might have to change our perspective. We should try to understand, we should seek to understand where the other person is coming from, because their perspective is their reality. Recognizing that our limitations is the basis of taking responsibility for what we think. As long as our perspective is blocking us, then we will not be able to see some things that might be good for our department. So we need to put ourselves in the other person's shoe at time and look from their eye view what they are saying to us. Now, sometimes our perspectives are skewed because of something that has happened to us in the past, or because we might not be as logical a thinker as some others. Some people might be more analytical than we are, and we have a perception, and it is not fully correct because we don't have that talent of being analytical or logical, sequential. But we need to learn that even though we are leaders, we don't have every talent that is needed, and that's why we work with teams. Have you ever worked with young children, and they come up with a brilliant idea of how to do something that you have been trying to do a long time ago, and you just couldn't do it? Have you ever had that? I'll put my hand up, because I've had that experience many times. Something that I have been trying so hard to do, and it just wasn't working. And then a little child just comes, and they don't even show you. They just do it themselves, and they're gone. And I'm like, I wonder why that was taking me so long to figure out, you know? So please remember, your team is there to help you. Now, be very open. Because when we get defensive, it's not really very progressive. If we feel that we're the leader And every time somebody else comes up with an idea and they don't take our idea, or our team don't take our idea, we get very defensive, then that is really not good for us as leaders, is it? No. We are not showing the right example to others, because we should be open enough to take ideas from those who are in our committee and to give ideas and all, and to come to a common consensus as to what we need to do and how the process is going to go. Sometimes we are so impulsive, we say things that we regret at times. Or sometimes we wish we are in a group, and sometimes we wish we had spoken up and say, we know that that perspective was not the right perspective, or we have had experience with that perspective or that way before, but we didn't share it. We just thought that, okay, they want to do it that way, they will learn. As ladies, we are supposed to help each other. And there's sometimes, too, that we avoid confronting some issues just because we don't like conflicts. We don't like to seem like we're against the person that said it. But we know that the issue needs to be confronted, but we don't do it. As ladies in ministry, we have an obligation to do that. We need to take responsibilities for our roles, in our roles in relationship, in our roles with in circumstances. And we need to also choose our responses well. We should interrupt any kind of patterns that are non-productive, and we should not just react, but we should communicate with others on our team. Now, there are different types of communication styles. And remember, we did this already, what the different things that we do when we interact. And we talked about the role of perception and why we have different perceptions. And we need to listen, because communication is making sure that we send the message that we want to be received. And our perception is our reality. Challenging the validity of our perceptions, we should, by testing it with other people's perception. Remember, we talked about the perception of the ship and whether ours was right. Challenging the absoluteness of our perception. Sometimes we think, no way, we are not going to change. We need to look from the other perspective. And challenging the current accuracy of our perception. Sometimes the things that we think we see are not really what it is, but if we listen to somebody else's perspective, we will see a clearer picture. We are to take responsibility, choose our responses well, interrupt any reactive patterns, you know, like patterns of thoughts that we might have, that we find out that if we always go this way, it always ends up wrong. We need to, when we are trying, when our mind's taking us that way, to stop it and go the other way. And don't react to others when they say something. We must communicate what we want to be communicated. You know, like if you tell somebody and they get it wrong, then you just need to communicate to them again. Welcome. The different styles of communication. And I'm going to go towards the end where I have these styles, the director. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to talk about, we're going to read about each of them. I'm going to choose one of the tables that it's going to be, we need four. One, two, three. I'm going to ask you to join that table to make four, so that we have four. And we have four different types of communicators. And we're going to read each of them, and then we're going to give you a scenario that you do at the table. Okay? So the first is the director. And this director, the director type communicator, is a person who is very... very accomplished usually, very self-confident. They know what they want. They tend to be impatient at times, and they want everything to be done like yesterday. You know those kind of leaders or those kind of people you have on your team? They want everything to be done yesterday. They speak very quickly, and they seem to get upset if somebody is a little bit more calmer and take a little longer to express themselves. They want to actually put words in their mouth and hurry them along. They usually use, they can use abbreviation for things sometimes that might confuse other people because they're going so fast. I want that done ASAP, you know, or they use abbreviation for other things that some of the team members might not know. They're very direct in their communication, and they think very, they say very much what they're thinking, and at times it might seem very abrasive for to others, but they're really not trying to do anything to you as a person. They are just trying to get the project completed. Most times those people, they really are not concerned about how the process goes along, whether everybody is happy doing the process, whether everybody is getting the process. What they are concerned about is, let's finish this project, and let's finish this project now. So that's the director. And most times you find them in leadership position, but sometimes you're a different kind of a leader and you have them on your team. You have these kind of persons on your team. Then you have the party person, and everybody has one of those people on their team sometimes. This is the person that as soon as they walk into the room, everybody starts smiling because, okay, the things didn't seem very happy before they got here. Or if they are not here, they are missed because they are the life of the group, right? They are outgoing, they are friendly, they are optimistic, they are informal, they don't get caught up on formalities, they enjoy life, they tend to communicate very clearly, they are energetic and creative, and they're doing their thing, and they're usually oblivious of anybody else, you know? And they don't mean anything by it, but they sometimes just ignore some people that are there, you know, because that person is not, everything should be centered around them. Do you have any such people on your committees? Have you ever met with such people on your committees? Yeah. Usually, these kinds of people, they have lots of ideas, they're very creative, and you have to be very careful how you shoot their ideas down, because they tend to take it personal at times. You know? But because they're idea-generating people, they come up with a lot of ideas, and sometimes if you take every one of their ideas as a team person, you get in trouble financially because you start little projects here, there, there, everywhere, and you don't have the money to do it. And you don't want to hurt their feelings, because if you don't take their ideas, they get very hurt sometimes. So you have to learn to manage these people. You have to be persistent in the direction, in the focus of your team, where your team wants to go. Is the project that, or whatever the creative ideas they're coming in with, does it match what you want to do and the outcome that you're looking for? If it doesn't, then be not afraid to put it aside, park it and say, oh, that is a very good idea, but we might be able to use it on our next project, you know, and park it. And look at your direction that you need to go in. Then you have the stabilizer. And this is the quieter, shy person, usually friendly, very supportive, very loyal, very caring. These are the people that they always turn up to the committee meeting. They probably don't talk a lot, but you can depend on them to be there for support. Anything that you plan and anything that is passed, they turn up on time. But some people tend not to appreciate them because they figure that they are contributing nothing. But sometimes when these people are given permission to speak, because sometimes they just sit quietly there waiting for the party person to just slow down a bit and for the leader to ask, for the leader to ask some questions, then sometimes, you know, they are waiting for their turn. They're waiting for their turn. And so you have to be very aware that these people are there. Very aware that these people, and as the leader, you need to pull them in the conversation because they have very solid points that can help you because they are reading everything that's going on and they are going to be your support. They're the ones that you're going to be able to depend on to come and help you to implement. Then you have the accountant type person, and this person is usually quiet, conscientious, they pay attention to all the details. They will be the one who will see the little flaw in the old plan. If we do it this way, this way, this way, what is going to happen over here? And they will point out to you something that can go wrong because they are the ones that look about the details of the plans that you're doing. And they too want you to give them the opportunity to share. And these accountant type people, they are usually very quiet, but when you give them permission to share, they're usually long. So you have to, and they don't, you have to stop them really carefully because you don't want to disenfranchise them because they speak so very rarely, but when they speak with such a passion and it's so much detail that it's usually very long. So you have to remember that. But each of the four groups of people are very valuable on your team, and they bring their strengths and they bring their challenges with them, as we talked about. And you need to listen because each of them have a different style of communication. Some can be blunt, some can be very flurry, some can be fast in speaking, some can be slow, some can be long-winded, some can be short without details, and so you are left without the main. You just have a smidge of idea and you don't know where to go from there. So be careful and be sure to validate each of the member of your team. Now, the role of empathy in communication. What is empathy? Empathy is learning to listen with your head and also your heart. So you're listening with your head, you know, to the ideas and the brain functioning part, the logical sequencing, the analytical part, does this idea make sense, all of that. But you're also listening to the heart. We have some people on our committees that if we listen to them, we will get it. Because our community and our churches are suffering. We have suffering, hurting people in our congregation. And if we listen to only the logical, sequential, structural things and the things that make sense with money and all of that, we miss the big picture of what Jesus did. Jesus was very compassionate, very empathetic. And we are building programs to help the hurting. But sometimes we forget about the hurting when we're building programs. And that's why women's ministry is so vital, because women's ministry speak to the heart, the empathy. We bring back the empathy in the church. We bring back the compassion that Jesus had. And we should be on those boards and on those committees drawing to the attention of these people the hurt of our congregations and the hurt that is in the community. So, and also the flip side to that is when we're communicating, we need to communicate with empathy, meaning that we must think of the other person's needs and concerns also. We must seriously take those in consideration. We may think that our need is most important, but remember that the other person is also speaking from a different place of hurt or a different perspective or a different experience that they have had. We must value their right to feel in the way they are feeling and their attitudes, because we don't know the circumstances that make them feel the way they feel or have the attitudes that they have toward whatever ideas we have or whatever we are communicating. We must be willing to give them privacy and to value and to value them and to learn from their experiences. You know, we don't have to go through the experience to learn from them. We might have somebody on our committee that has been abused. We can learn from them how abused women feel, so that when we're doing a program, we can be sensitive to what they will feel when they come into the church. So we need to listen to them. And last but not least, the group that did this portion did it extremely well. The Sister Cam? What was your name?
Scar.
Sister Scar. She talked about reserving your judgment and also blame. Reserving judgment and blame. You might see somebody that is living a very promiscuous life. You don't know why. You don't know that that person was raped from 5 years old right up, and don't know the difference between what is, you know, you're saying that they're adults now, they should know. But because of what has happened to their minds from they were small, what they were told from they were small by their fathers or their uncles that raped them and stuff like that, then their perception is different, they are skewed, and we have no right to judge them. And worse, we have no right to blame them because of where they are. Because you don't know the circumstances that caused them to be there. So in our speech, we need to remember to be empathetic. Now, how can we create empathy? We might have become so callous in life because of situations and because of so many people who have tried to trick us in life, or so many tricks that people are playing in life on others. You know, there are all sorts of tricks that are out there now that people are trying to play to get our money, to scam us and all of that. We might get very insensitive, right? So now we must build empathy for those that we're working with in our communities. We must be aware of their cultural differences. The cultural differences. If we are working with Muslims and their husbands say that they need to cover their head, do not try to tell the ladies, no, you're in a Western country, you don't have to cover your head. You know, don't try to understand their culture. Try to understand why they do things the way they do, and respect them for it. Because you would not like, if you don't do certain things in your family, you would not like somebody to come and impose it on your family. Now, they look at the person and take an active interest in them when you're communicating with them, when you're talking with them. Of course, there are some cultures that the woman cannot look in the eye of the man when they're talking, or they don't look in your eye because where they are from, it's disrespectful to look in the eye. The Eastern culture is very disrespectful to look somebody in the eye when you're speaking, so they will hold their head down. Don't force them to do what they are not willing to do, or what is not culturally comfortable for them to do. But take interest with them. Show them you care. Ask relevant questions about different things, but don't drill them like he is an interrogation. Ask polite questions, to understand, to clarify things that they're trying to say to you. Now, sometimes you have people who speak a different language, and when you keep asking them the same thing, they get really very shy because they don't know if they're saying it right or not. Just be very sensitive to that. Make use an open body language. Look at them, but if you know that their culture say don't look into the eye, don't do it. Don't force them to do it. You know, talk with them face to face. Do not cross your hands or do things that would cause you to look like you're blocking communication. You know, you stand up like this. Be open, hands down, palms out, you know, your face smiling, that sort of thing to invite communication. Now, if you are trying to talk with someone, and the Japanese do this really very well. When we traveled over to Malaysia, and we were on the Cathay Pacific airline, each stewardess, when they came to speak with us, they would stoop right down to eye level. Yes, and they will talk to you. They talk to you face to face. They never look down on you. If someone is sitting and you really want to communicate with them, sit beside them so that you can communicate. Don't stand over them. It's a little intimidating at times. Be aware of your facial expression, especially if you make some faces that you're unaware of sometimes. You know, we make faces when we hear something, you know, and we're not even aware of them. Try to practice in your mirror. If anything else that you want to do, anything else, just smile. Use affirming gestures, but if, don't touch. Nod your head, make sounds of, yes, you know, but don't necessarily touch the person if it's not culturally all right to do so. Use a very warm, inviting tone. Don't be screaming or shouting. Just be encouraging and very warm with your voice when you are talking with them. Okay, so this is about the different types of teams, and we're going to practice it afterwards, but we're going to talk about some empathy blockers now as we go on. What are some things that would block empathy? What about if somebody was very dominating? Tell me some of the ways people act when they're when they try to dominate a conversation. They don't listen to others. What else?
They interrupt.
What else? Anybody else? Okay, those are two very good ones. When people try to dominate, sometimes in a conversation, especially with male and female, they're sometimes, or parent and child, there are threats, you know, when the parent is trying to dominate and say, I am the ruler here in this house, there are threats like, if you don't get this work done, you know, this is what you're liable for. Now, parents have, as parents, need to do that at times, but not always. But on the job, say you're on the job, how does that come over to you if your boss tries to threaten you, you know? If, yes, please. I'm sorry. You will get your handouts to fill in. Thank you. Yes, how about your boss? Would you appreciate if your boss was threatening you? Would you appreciate that? Have anybody had give me a sentence or something, give me an example of what a boss could do if they're threatening you. How would that sound? You'll be fired if you don't do this, right? Or if you don't report to work on Sabbath, you're going to lose your job.
I am the boss.
I am the boss. I am the boss. I say it, you do it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So those are some of the threatening. You do this or else. Or if you don't do this, you won't get a good job review. Or it's something like that. What about ordering? Ordering.
Get me my coffee.
Get me my coffee. I'll see you in the office immediately. Get in my office immediately. Now, what about on your team? On your team. Do you have anybody? Give me an example of what would look like a threat or ordering on your team.
I don't like her.
I tell the supervisor. I'm talking about your women's ministry's team. Can you think of anything that would sound?
If you don't do this, then I'm not part of this group anymore.
Isn't that a popular one with women?
Yes.
If you don't do it this way, I am not coming back. I am not helping. I am not going to be a part of this. We have that all the time. What about ordering?
Sorry, yes. Is that manipulation more than dominance?
It is a bit of both of them. If they say, do this or else I will not come back, that is a threat. Do this, you know, do it this way or else I will not come back. They're actually threatening you that they are not going to be part of it. Yeah.
How about like somebody said, well, you know, that's a bad idea. We should do it my way.
Okay, do it my way or the I way. Yes. We're talking about ordering. So how would you order? How would you use that to say? How would you order your team to do something?
Why don't we do this?
Oh. Or do this.
Yeah.
Just do this. What about criticizing? Criticizing is looked at as domineering also. Being very critical of one of the team members. Judith doesn't work very hard, you know, on our team, you know, or something like that, would be criticizing Judith right there in our team meeting, or Andrea never comes early, you know. I forgot your name. But, so when you criticize like that, the person doesn't feel very good about themselves, right? What about name calling? Name calling also is a means of domineering people. Or you shouldn't do it this way, or you shouldn't do it that way, or you shouldn't do it that way, or you shouldn't do it that way. Okay, so that you get the main idea of domineering, and that can be an empathy blocker in conversation. Then we have manipulation, which is what you are talking about. So manipulation, sometimes when we interrogate people, we can praise people in order to manipulate them. Don't people do that a lot? They praise you with a caveat to it. Like, you're so good at report writing. Why don't you do this for us today? Right? So that's a means of manipulating. It's a nice way sometimes, but sometimes we don't feel that that is appropriate. And, you can interrogate members of your team, like put them on the spot. Well, we want you to do this, but how long do you think it's going to take you? And you know that the person is very busy and they have work, and the person's like, I will have to get back to you on that. No, we just want to know how long is it going to take you, you know? Interrogate. What about withholding relevant information? It is better sometimes as a team leader or a member of a committee not to say something if you can't release the information. Don't like, something is going to happen, but I can't really tell you guys about it right now. Why say that? Why say that? No, it's not necessary. It's a manipulation, because some people is going to come to you afterwards and say, well, please, just share with us. Just share with us. What is it that you know that we need to know? Now, this empowerment, you can sometimes disempower your committee members by trying to say what their motive is about. We can't read people's motive. It's judging. People do things, and we might say, oh, you know why she's doing that? It's because she wants to be up on the rostrum on that day. She's putting her name there because we can't judge people's motives. We are not supposed to do that. Untimely advice. You know, why don't you keep your desk a certain way? Why don't you do it this way? Why don't you give us the report this way? Or you can be talking to people and you can change the topic, like the person is asking you about the process and you feel that they're asking you too many times and you said, what about your son? Is your son still sick? You know, you change the topic on them. You just cut them off like that. Then there is denial, refusing to address the issue. The person can be asking you about it. There is nothing to discuss anymore. I'm finished with this. There's nothing to discuss, you know. And that can really, really turn off members of your committee. Now we're on to the, that was your communication, how you should communicate, why you communicate, and have empathy with the members on your team when you communicate. And we talked about those blockers. We talk about manipulation. We talk about disempowerment. We talked about denial, refusing to address the issue. And now we're on to the communication process. And we talked about this yesterday a little bit too. Verbal is only 7% of what you're communicating. 38 is vocal and 55 is visual. Okay, we have to remember that we communicate. Communication can be unconscious, can be unintentional, and incongruent. Unconscious communication, it's things that you communicate to others that you did not really want to, but they pick it up anyway. Unconsciously, you are communicating to them certain things. And then you might communicate something to someone unintentionally because of your facial expression. You know, you might be saying, I like that very much, but your face is like, I don't like that at all. Or I like you very much, but your face is saying, I don't like you at all. You know, unintentional. And remember what we said, one of our groups did it, I think group number 5, that we what we say and what we do should match. What we say and what we do. Meaning that when we're communicating, what we're saying, our facial expressions, the way our hands are, our movements, all should be congruent with what we are speaking, you know? So you should not be saying, come and be doing this, you know? Come here. And this is the opposite of come, right? You're telling them to go with your hand. You're saying go, but you're saying come with your mouth. So that's what you should not be doing with your body language, okay? Now, we're on to managing conflicts. What we say and what we do should match. Managing conflict, and the acronym that we're going to use to manage conflict is STAR, the STAR acronym. And that is easily remembered. These are the steps that you can use to resolve conflicts. first, when there are conflict, you try not to react immediately. You think about it. You start gathering in your mind information. Why is this the way it is? You know, why isn't things going smoothly here? Why is the interaction going a little bit haywire? So you stop and you start thinking about it. Then you analyze, what happened? What did I say? What could have gone wrong? What did I say? Could it have been interpreted a different way? And then you do all three steps before you do the last one, which is to respond to the conflict. So if somebody is getting back at you after you communicated to them, you know, and it seems very conflictual, then you stop. You think about the information that you just said or what they responded to you about. You analyze what you said with what they said back to you before you respectfully communicate to them again about the situation. When conflict arises, which usually does arise, you should use a principle to help to resolve the conflict. And you have to practice on a regular basis how to do this. It doesn't come automatically. Resolving conflict does not come automatically, because our first way as human beings is to respond immediately to what somebody says that doesn't sound too well coming back to us. Our first incline is to answer them immediately. But if we stop, if we think, if we analyze what we said versus what they said, then it will slow us down and it will give us a better response. And it's always best to respond to conflict honestly and constructively. So if you know that what you're going to say is going to stir up the person some more, you're just going to really make the conflict worse, right? And so it's best to think about it and to deal with it constructively. There are a variety of conflict management strategies, but that you can use in different situations. We have taught you this one for communication's sake, but there are others that you can use, like the avoid, wait and see. Like if you and on your board, on your team meeting, there was a conflict with someone, and if you know it's a person that needs to cool down before you talk to them again, you know, maybe like the party person or the director kind of person, then you need to let them cool down first. Then you wait and you might see if they will come to you to resolve the conflict. Now, do not use this as a means of avoiding clearing up the matter, you know, because you are one who don't like conflict. If you know that you're one that don't like conflict and you're just going to use this method, and say, oh, I'm going to use the avoiding method because you really don't want to clear it up, then that's not going to work. But if you know that it is the best one to use in this instance, then use it. Force. If you use force, then you will have a win-lose situation. If you force a consensus, if the person is not willing to make a decision at that time or to comply, and you force them to comply at that time, then you're not really resolving the conflict. You are going to win, the person is going to lose. Then the next one is to accommodate. If you accommodate them, then you lose and the person wins. You accommodate them, it isn't resolved for you. And then the fourth one, you compromise, when nobody wins if both of you compromise. And the last one is if you collaborate. And that's where you want to reach when you're managing conflicts with each other. So we have 5 steps in resolving conflicts. This is what you do when you have to resolve conflict. You pray. You pray together about the problem. Then you try to clarify the issues. You try to take the persons out of it, and you try to clarify the issues. You focus on what is needed for your committee to go forward and the goals that you're trying to meet. Then you try to understand. Say, I would say, I would put myself in Andrea's shoe here. Andrea and I are having a conflict. She explains to me what she needs and what her goals are and what her situation is. I explain to her. Then I try to see from her perspective what would be a good answer for her. She tries to see from my perspective what it would be. And then we make small steps in resolving the conflict. It will take time. Give yourself time. But that will help. So these are the ways that I am leaving with you and how to manage conflict. I would like you to go home and I'd like you to practice them. I would also like you to read up about the different types of people that you have on your committee. And I'm hoping that this will help you with some of the problematic conflicts that you might have as a woman's ministry leader in your church or as a team leader. God bless you and thank you for coming.